Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Marcus, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon. You can too by visiting patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up podcast listeners, to this, the Backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown-Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, of course, is Mo. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Of course, George is here. Hey, George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You know, they say it's not the destination, but the journey that matters. Striking out on a trip before... What are you laughing at me for? That is what they say. Striking out on a trip, be it for business or pleasure, has changed dramatically, though, since our days growing up as Gen Xers. So in this backtrack, we're exploring all the ways that the travel experience has evolved from how we first experienced it in the 70s and 80s. And this was a backtrack that Mo, you suggested at some point in the past. And we found that it changed for a lot of different reasons, too. There are things that changed, but various reasons that it changed. And I think we've lined up some interesting discussion topics that we'll explore how that stuff has changed. Before we get to that, though, we have some fourth listener email. And I've gathered a small collection of fourth listener email that all came to us via different avenues, but about the same backtrack.
Oh, which one? Huh.
The required reading backtrack, you guys.
That was a big one.
Okay. So the first one was an email. Came from Tom W. And he said, "Hey guys, I'm listening to your recent podcast about Gen X required reading. Though I am an avid reader, I was the worst slacker in high school, especially in English class."
I feel
hey,
you, man.
George, you got a buddy. There's another Cliff's Notes guy for you. "One year, I got one of the hippie teachers, thank God, and the English lit textbook we used was all sci-fi short stories." He says, "Forget Beowulf. I was reading Vonnegut and Roddenberry and loved every minute of it."
Nice.
Now, I had a great English teacher, but I didn't have the hippie teacher. That sounds great. He wraps up saying, "We also got to analyze B-52 songs from the Rock Lobster album."
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. "Mr. Brewer, the teacher, was pretty cool, and I'm a teacher today because of guys him.
Nice.
Oh, that's neat. Wow. Yep. The next one, also about required reading, came in from John E., and I think this was one of these was on the, came through Facebook, and the other was through our YouTube channel. I didn't note which one was which, but John wrote in and said, "Oh, the dreaded summer reading list. Always an unexpected joy of summer. One of my favorites was The Great Train Robbery by Michael Crichton." One of your favorites, George, I know. Mm-hmm. It may have been his first novel.
It was.
It was an early one. It was his first one?
Oh.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
There you go. Yeah, and one more, Randy Powell dropped us a line, said, "A few years ago when my youngest son was in high school, he was required to read To Kill a Mockingbird, which we discussed in our show." And he was not an avid reader, so we decided to read it together and then discuss the sections he had to read each week. Oh, nice. It was a wonderful bonding time, so I understand exactly how Mo felt going over books with his dad. Such a wonderful time for us to bond. Yeah, similar experience that Randy had there, too.
Oh, I want to hear an interesting little, you say my brush with celebrity, I guess you would call it. I had an English teacher in high school who was kept talking about this great novel he was writing, right? Like most, like a lot of teachers, right? Went to college, he published his novel and won a Pulitzer Prize.
Wow. Cool. Anybody we'd know?
Yeah, it was Angela's Ashes.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, Frank McCourt. He was my English teacher for 2 years in high school.
I'll be damned.
So I'll be like, well, I'll be damned. Frank wasn't lying. He was actually writing a book.
He was making a great book. Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you, Tom and John and Randy, for writing in. Look, not that I didn't think the required reading backtrack was good, but I didn't think it'd get this much response. Yeah. We get a lot of emails about this episode, and I guess it's the battlefield trauma that we all want to share with one another that we all have the required reading. So. All right. Thanks all of you for writing. And we love it anytime the fourth listener takes time to let us know what they think of the shows we put out. If you'd like your email featured on the show, it's drop dead easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We'll read every single one. And most of them, like these fine gentlemen, will eventually make the show. All right. We are now jumping into that Gen X travel experience right after this quick break. Stick around. Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals and their meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky. Mm-hmm. Because they have over 35 options. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Sheraton show place. Ooh. You're gonna love every inch of the place. We've got taste.
I love the taste of Sheraton.
Show place style. We've got style. Come for a visit and stay for a while. You're sure to leave with a smile on your face. We've got taste.
Sheraton, taste, you've got taste.
Show place taste. You see it all around you the moment you
I love the taste of Sheraton.
The friendliest service with a touch of finesse. You love all our people, so come be our guest. Taste,
taste,
Sheraton.
Sheraton, with over 400 hotels and inns in more than 40 countries, welcoming 20 million travelers a year. Sheraton, the hospitality people of ITT.
When we were trying to figure out how to categorize all of the different changes that have happened mm-hmm. from Generation X's travel experience to now, mm-hmm. it was not easy. We probably went through like three or four different rounds of categorization and stuff. What we ended up coming up with, I think, is pretty unique. I don't think you'll hear a lot of other podcasts going in this route if you hear this topic on them.
For better or worse.
The first section that we came up with was how things have changed as far as their ease of use. Like how difficult it was to do something in the past or easy that it was in the past compared to today.
Yeah.
One of the first ones that I thought of when we were thinking along those lines was the difference between booking travel with a travel agent or now doing it yourself through booking websites. And I know specifically that I have done both in my lifetime. Now, as an adult, once when I got married, I used a travel agent. That was the first, last, and only time I've ever used a travel agent.
Once.
And it wasn't because it was a bad experience. It's just since then, the booking websites make everything seem so easy. Booking a travel agent, though, as I remember, was very straightforward. I called them up. I told them when I wanted to go, where I wanted to go, and how much I wanted to spend max. And they took care of the travel for the flight, the hotel, any little amenities that we had on our honeymoon. It was really nice. The booking websites, personally, I think it's a more difficult situation now because you have to do all of that research yourself.
Yeah.
And you're never quite 100% sure if you're good enough to be getting the best deals.
Oh, yeah. At least that's the way I feel.
Yeah.
It puts all the responsibility on you is the thing.
Yeah, it does. I remember back, I used to work for American Express back in the late 80s, early 90s. And when I started working there, American Express had travel agents. Like they used to have a travel agency. Like that was part of their business. And so in our office, we had a travel agent downstairs that we had to book all of our business travel with. And we told her where we were going, how long. She would do that, and then she would send us a thing with our itinerary and here's all our tickets and all that stuff. And then they switched to computer. And then they had this whole requirement that you had to use a new system. And I remember somebody was going from like here to like California, and it literally, the computer had him flying from Jacksonville to like Detroit, Detroit to Minnesota, Minnesota back to Detroit, and then Detroit to California.
Yay, computers.
And he's like, what the hell?
It's nuts, but I mean, so yeah, you can control those fine details on your own now, especially with the airline flights and everything, but it's not just airlines. It's getting a rental car. It's getting your hotel,
That's right.
Booking excursions on a cruise, right? All of that stuff is now handled by you through either that company's website or some generic Google Travel or Travelocity or whatever type place. And I always feel like I'm missing out on something that I could get, like, you know, free upgrades to breakfasts or something.
And B,
I am always 100% convinced that I'm paying more than if some expert who does this all day long did it for me. So I am constantly, before I go to book something, I am going to the YouTube websites for these travel blogger people to try and find little tips and tricks and hacks and stuff. And even then I'm like, well, this guy says do it this way and this lady says do it that way and this thing. To me, it's much more of a headache. I'd rather not even think about it and just go to a travel agent. I know they're still out there, but I don't do it because it's right here at my computer. There. I can do it instantly.
It is.
So
I was looking at it as kind of a trade-off. It's like if I'm paying a travel agent, well, I'm pay them whatever it is that you do. They're getting their cut. They're getting paid somehow, right? Yeah, somehow out of my money. Or maybe they're just getting commissions off of the other people. Mm-hmm. But also, they're going to promote the things they get the best kickbacks from. So I might not find out about some little attractions or things like that. So it is a trade-off. I like doing it myself because I know I see everything, but it is a hassle. You're not wrong there.
Yeah. I mean, there's that personal touch you are losing. Like I know going through travel agencies, like they would know things like, oh, this airline is always late getting to this airport or these seats.
Have the experience of like a seasoned traveler. Yeah. Sure.
Like, oh my God, row 50. Oh, that's right next to the bathroom. You don't want that. You know, I mean, just the stuff that they would know that just from experience, from having done it a million times. But yeah, I agree. I think there's some question like if they give me the best deal or the best deal for them, you know, it's definitely a question.
Yeah. You never know.
So, you know, another thing that's really changed, and this is actually what kind of prompted me to even put this topic for us to talk about, is that I was in a hotel and they had a little placard, you know, the little cardboard thing next to the phone and you know, zero for the front desk and the, you know, three for a wake-up call. I'm like, oh my God, people still do wake-up calls?
They still wake-up calls?
I still use them.
Really?
Because
Now I just set my phone to do it for me because they always had like some crappy alarm clock in the room that I never trusted. So I always did do wake-up calls back in the day
because
this alarm clock did not look like functional. But today, though, it's all on my phone.
So back in the day, John and I both worked in hotels. Now, John worked in the restaurant section. He delivered food to the rooms. But I worked at the front desk overnight. And so because I worked overnight as the, quote, night auditor is what they called that position. I actually was the person who would get the most calls for wake up calls the next day. And so I had to input all of that. And it was essentially this like giant like keyboard built computer thing that was specifically built for wake up calls and wake up calls only. You would have to press the room number. You would have to key in the time in military format and then press another button to submit it. And then the system would do the wake up call, as I'm sure you're used to. But what I appreciate is I've been in a couple of hotels over the last few years that still did a human wake-up call.
Wow.
Where
oh, really?
The person actually called and said, hey, Mr. Sumter, time to wake up. How are you feeling? Don't forget to get a shower so you can... Little stuff like that. It was slightly creepy, but at least right. It was still happening.
Remember to bathe. We don't want you stinky down here. Yeah.
We saw how you looked last night.
Maybe they can do that now because fewer people are using it. Because before, everybody's getting up at 6 or 6:30.
Right.
And you couldn't call 20 people, 50 people. But they probably get fewer wake-up calls now. So they just say, oh, just call the three people that didn't want to use their phone. But like you, Mo, I'm not going to trust that bedside clock. Not so much because I think the clock is broken, but because I don't know how to use that clock. Is that AM? Is that PM? Yeah, exactly. Did I set it right? Is it silent? Is it radio? Is it? Yeah, I don't know. But these days, like you, I just use my phone or my tablet or whatever got on the side of my bed. That makes all the noise that I need, and it's going to wake me up. And at least I know it works because it worked the last five places I was.
You know, one other thing that kind of brought this up is that flying, you know, economy class, because flying back in the day, it was always at least a certain level of nice. Like, you know, you can get at least a relatively comfortable seat, you know, back then, right. Like you had enough leg room at least. Right.
Yep.
But now it seems like things are like they're shrinking it almost to the point of forcing you to buy upgraded seats so that you get the leg room you used to get normally. Cause I guess they could fit an extra row of seats if they shorten everything by an inch or something like that, you know? And that's just, I mean, it's not for our ease of use, that's for sure, but it's definitely for the airlines.
Mm-hmm.
So I hate that there is a metric in the industry for knowing what that dimension is, that pitch measurement,
the pitch,
where it's like from one point of the seat in front of you to the seat in that you're in. And I watch one of the YouTube travel guys that I watch. He always has this, the greener grass measuring tape that he uses when he goes on these flights to check the pitch between the seats. And the numbers that he's always giving off are like 24 inches of this and 6 inches of knee room. And I'm like, fucking A, 6 inches of knee room. Jesus Christ. And I remember specifically when I went to the Philippines on that long haul international flight with my wife, one of the things after I had my horrific hospital stay because of my collapsed lung, one of the things that the doctors told me was, when you're on these long haul flights, make sure that you get up every 30 minutes to every 45 minutes and walk around the cabin.
That's what they say.
Because sitting in that seat for that long a period of time in that cramped a condition with that amount of stress and pressurized air is one of the things that can cause the condition that I had. So it can cause real health concerns compared to back when, you know, my parents might have flown back in the 70s. The economy seats were like the business class seats now. I mean, there was like a whole person between you and the seat in front of you almost.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, people aren't actually doing that. It's great advice. You know, it's like, oh, you should get up and walk around at work, too. But on a plane of, I don't know, several hundred people, if everybody was getting up every 30 minutes to walk around, it would be like a little bit looking like your high school track. There'd be always people never in their seat walking around. But something you touched on, George, that you really nailed was like, is that pitch thing in the distance? They can put more seats in there, but first class or whatever premium class or whatever you want to call it used to be a nice step up. Now, the difference, the chasm between economy and first class or business or whatever they call it on different flights is tremendous.
Oh, my God,
is like the, what do they call it, steerage or whatever on the Titanic, the people down in the bottom of the boat, you know,
yeah,
it's steerage. That everybody's down there and there's like 12 people up on the deck with a fruity drink and an umbrella in it. It's the huge difference. And I speak from experience from both sides. You know what? You guys know I traveled huge amounts for years and years and years. And I had status to the point that I often flew first class. And so now recently I've been flying again and it's not first class. I'm like, oh, it's gotten even worse than it used to be. Yeah, you're crammed in. Yeah, you're in the side, but there's just so much stuff you take for granted when you're first class, like room, elbow room, knee room, shoulder room, all that, instead of just being, I'm a little sardine packed in my little can.
You know, it's funny. Two things that I've thought about while you were giving all that is, number one, it probably won't be long before they just do away with seats at all in economy and just put fucking walking pads down so that, oh, your doctor says you should walk more. So we just took the seat away. Now you have to walk the entire flight.
We in order charge the batteries
to get where you're going. Exactly. And I just saw a story the other day. I forgot what news channel it was on, but there is a billionaire who wants to revive the Titanic. for everything exactly the way it was on the original Titanic.
Exactly the way
wants to build it blueprint specific, but not just that, also like passenger specific. So the people who like get the third class tickets, like the cheapest things, they're literally gonna have to all sit at one long buffet table and eat mash and gruel. The That's what he's experience. Seriously what? Going Why? To feed them.
Why? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
You joke about the walking around and the walking pads, George, but I have seen plans for people on short haul flights to have leaning bars that are like 30 degree little pads that you just like lean your butt up against. Shit? Yes, like a bus for planes. It has a little strap to hold you in, but you're just leaning. You're not sitting. And the rationale is if you're not sitting down, it takes up less space. You can cram in more people. Can you imagine how close your face would be to the seat in front of you or the person's back in front of you?
Jesus.
Oh. Yeah, because we all love the public busing system so much in this country. Yeah.
Everything you joke about is probably in development.
let's stop paying $1.25 in our cities for that, and let's pay $400 in the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one other way that they really hit us for money is the baggage issues.
Oh, my God, don't get me started.
It's been going on for the last 15, 20 years, but it's the divide between checking a bag, which used to, I don't even remember, when I was a kid, I don't even remember them saying what the limit was. It was just check your bags and we'll put them all in the cargo hold.
Yep.
To now, every single check bag is a fee. So it's almost like they're forcing you to carry on, which is a smaller bag because they make it those dimensions for the overhead bins. And so it's a way for them to save weight, which saves fuel, which saves them money.
Right.
Yeah. It's just crazy how they just hit you nickel and dime you just for stuff like that these days. Because it's I remember back in the day, my dad would travel overseas sometimes and he had this massive canvas suitcase. I mean, that thing was bigger than me. It was huge. You can carry a body in it. And I know that thing had to weigh like 70 pounds, 80 pounds easy.
Right.
But he just threw it on the thing and they do a tag around it and they just threw it on the carousel. They didn't care.
I just find that funny that there's a term out there that we all know, carry a body in a bag, meaning it's such a big and good heavy bag. And the one person I remember from my day in Gen X as advertising for luggage was O.J. Simpson. I'm just saying they're not a corollary, but...
Oh, man.
When I traveled a ton, I always checked a lot of bags. But again, I had the status where the checked bags, first of all, it would have been covered by my business. But beyond that, it didn't cost anything, even my business, because when you have status, you go, oh, first bag free, second bag free based on your status. And again, just recently, we're talking about this ease of use. I traveled to Vegas back at the beginning of the year, checked my two bags. I'm like, whoa, they're charging me money for this. Like, this is like, I forgot that. And I get the rationale. The idea is like, well, if nobody checks a bag, it's less fuel. So why don't we back off the price of the ticket and then only charge a premium if you do check a bag? That's how they explain it. But ultimately, the prices of the tickets continue to rise. They don't come down. Oh, yeah. Plus, you have to tack on the extras.
Of course.
Yeah, it's bags. Ugh. And I travel heavy is my problem. So I have two giant bags and there I am.
Things might be easier to use these days, but I don't necessarily think that they're easier.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the split? It's like it might be more obvious, but it's not more intuitive, if that makes sense. Like I get how to do it, but it's not so simple. It's not so straightforward. There's more effort now because they're offloading it on us. They're saying, oh, you guys do this and you'll save money, but we don't. It's the same amount. Plus, we're doing the work for them. Another way that the travel experience has changed dramatically is how technology has modified the travel. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about when we get back from this quick break.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
These days, a lot of airlines are cutting corners on their meals.
This little beauty we like to call banquet on a bun, right, Bob?
Banquet on a bun.
I like it.
Sit down, Bob. Now with this, you could serve a whole plain loaf for just pennies.
I like it.
Elastic parsley. You can use it over and over again.
I like it.
Pick me chickens. You can get 125 in an ordinary shoebox.
I like it.
At Alaska Airlines, we spend a little more on our meals, and you can taste the difference.
Being Gen X, one of the things that we've seen change probably more than anything else is technology and computers and how that's really changed every aspect of our lives. And I think we really see that in our travel. And John, I think yours, what you're going to talk about here is probably one of the biggest examples, I think, that everybody uses.
Oh, and it hits so close to home, too. It's how we move from maps, then to atlases, and then to MapQuest, and then now GPS. Mm-hmm. I have the worst sense of direction of anyone I have ever met. I'm not kidding. And this is not hyperbole for the sake of the backtrack. I have the worst sense of direction.
He does. Everybody was asking.
Yep. I can get lost in a big room. It's really silly. And so I always lived and died by a map. And then I loved when you could print out a map. Like, the tractor feed paper and the MapQuest instructions. You're hanging them on the dash. And now with a GPS, I'll plug in the directions on a GPS to go up to the corner store just so I know where to turn. It's silly. But George is nodding. He knows. Mo's ridden with me. He knows. That's how I operate. If the GPS satellites went down, you'd find me wandering in the desert somewhere. I could not find my way around
Not knowing how he got there.
No.
Yeah, John is not only the most lost human being I know, he's also the fastest, craziest driver I've ridden with. So it's really fucking scary when you're riding with a guy who drives a V8 Hemi, whatever the hell, muscle car thing, stomps on the gas, but has no fucking clue where he's going unless that computer tells him, turn left here, John.
Holy I know where shit, I'm
John,
going.
You're going too fast. But I wanted to tell a little story. I grew up during the same area you guys did. So I grew up with my father handing me the map in the back of the car and, you know, making sure you folded it properly to put it back together. Yeah. You know, he'd lose his mind if that didn't fit back in the glove compartment the right way. But when I got older and I would drive, I grew up in a small town here, Tallahassee, Florida. And after maybe 2 or 3 months of driving myself, I knew where every street was, all the little back roads, all the hidden ways to get around traffic and everything. But then right at my 30th birthday, I moved out to Los Angeles, California.
That's experience.
So that's a completely different driving experience. Yeah. And the first thing I decided was I need to buy a map of LA so I can learn the roads and everything. Sure. Well, they don't sell a map in LA. Not back then. They sold a book called The Thomas Guide. And this thing was literally 300 pages of maps of downtown LA and the surrounding areas. And if somebody said, oh, come over to my house, I'm on page E74.
Oh, really?
That's how you found their house.
And they just
backtracked. And it was this really well put together system that you could go from one place to another place by flipping the pages in a certain way and find your way. But that's how you got around. And then John got his first Garmin while I was out there.
Yep.
And it had John Cleese's voice on it.
I remember that. Yeah.
And it was not just that it would give the instructions, but because it was John Cleese, he would say things, oh, you've missed your turn. I guess you really didn't care about that, or whatever he would say.
Yeah. Why listen
and
to
I
me?
I got one of those. Then eventually we got into MapQuest and then GPS. Ooh, but that Thomas Guide,
that's interesting.
That was the ultimate map that I've ever seen in any city situation.
Wow. I mean, I remember back in the day, if you were going on a long road trip, one of the things that AAA would do for you is that you would go to AAA and say, I'm going from here to here.
Right. Yeah.
And they would print a book with just the maps you need to get to your destination.
Like your personal itinerary map.
Yeah, turn by turn. All the hotels were labeled, the gas stations. I mean, it was pretty amazing. I mean, it was really detailed.
And little roadside attractions, too.
Roadside attractions, things to do.
Consider the ball of yarn. Consider seeing the giant Paul Bunyan. Right. They have, suggestions. That's that travel agency benefit.
And it was like a little flip book they would make for you that as you're traveling, you just flip the next page. It was pretty cool, I thought. I thought that was really – now, of course, you get that on your phone and with, you know, Waze. Right. Or other stuff, but I don't know. This is very cool.
What attractions are nearby? Bloop.
Yeah. Right? It's all
done. I mean, speaking of phone, one thing that's changed quite a bit technology wise, and it's gone through pretty much all the travel industries, train, boat, airplane, are going from paper tickets that you used to have to hold on to with dear life, you know, or if you lost it, that was it. You were stuck in Toledo or some shit. all the way up till now, we have the e-tickets, and it's even now, it's just a little QR code that you boop and you're through and all like that. I have still seen that people will still print paper tickets, and I've watched people at airports specifically when they go up with their paper ticket, how the gate agent is so pissed. God damn God, it. I got to hold this paper ticket and tear it and put it on this machine for you. But it, you know, it's just been in the last 15 years or so that it's really taken hold. And I don't know if it's better or worse, but I feel like it is a little bit more convenient, but it's another one of those things they pushed off to our expense. They don't have to print that paper ticket anymore. Mm-hmm. We now have to have a phone with a cell service provider that we pay for. We have to download your app. We are now having to do the work. It's like checking yourself out at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when they first started doing the switch to the tickets. I remember the early days, I felt like weird not having a paper ticket and just like doing my phone. Like, is this going to work? Are they going to actually let me on the plane if I do legal? This? Yeah. Is this right? And of course, sometimes the sensors didn't work. I mean, I've had times I remember going up and didn't bleep, and then they wound up printing me a ticket at the gate and then using that instead because they couldn't get the phone thing to work. I mean, but it's definitely that's definitely has changed a lot.
Yeah, I was traveling peak travel during the time when Delta, for example, went from paper tickets to they embraced the digital ticket thing. And I experienced that initially I would have them print a ticket for me just in case, you know, like I trust it kind of. But sometimes you'll get to, depending on the gate you go to, it's like, oh, our scanner, they haven't installed a scanner here yet. And during the like the 10-year window when I was traveling a lot, I went from, it's a novelty that you would try to the way you described it, George, which is if you bring a paper ticket, it's like walking up to the grocery store with a checkbook. You know, you open up that checkbook and they go, oh, Jesus, seriously? One of these? A paper thing? It's just...
And the everybody paper, behind you in line is saying the same thing.
Yeah.
They are, yeah. The paper version has become the second-class citizen where it used to be, like you said, Mo, it seems like it's not legal. It used to be you couldn't do anything without that paper ticket. Hang on to it. Stuck in Toledo, right? Yeah. And now you got to have anything. Just wave your phone, your magic little black box at people, and suddenly everything works. It's crazy.
Nearly the tech has hit that is probably not as obvious to a lot of people is hotel keys. I'm older than you guys, but I remember days of having an actual key with the big key.
That's not exclusive to you. I remember hotel keys. I'm just saying, you're not that old.
I remember going to the ones with like that plastic thing with the holes in it.
Yes.
You remember those things?
Yeah. Like the Bates Motel key. It's like a diamond shape kind of, and it had the key hooked to it.
Yep. No, he's talking about the one that was a square card that you pushed into the lock, and the holes allowed the lock tumblers to push through.
Right.
Well, so is that, but was we have a key before that. We had real keys before that.
Right, right. Well, let's see. Then we went to
he
that.
He had moved past that. He's too old. He had moved past.
Yeah, I'm past that already.
Most started back when they were just smashing the door with a rock because they didn't have keys at all.
No, we didn't lock doors back then. No one cared. But then, you know, then we went to, now even I've seen places that you don't even need any kind of thing. It's your phone will open your door for you. It's for me, that's actually, I kind of like, I think that's more convenient, except I'm like, what happens if your phone dies? That's the only thing I always worry about now. But it's definitely convenient not to have an extra thing to worry about carrying around.
I had that exact experience, Mo, back in January when I took my trip over to CES. My phone, while it was on the floor, died. And I don't mean lost power. It just wouldn't turn on. It's having a problem. And that was the one that had my key on it. So when I got back to the hotel, I'm like, well, I had on my the phone in my hand that I had switched over to, but didn't have me logged in and didn't have my key card and everything. And they had to literally check me back in order to print me a new key card because it was so ingrained. Wow. And so still at this point, I will say, like the old days of the airline, I'll say, I'll use my phone, but give me an actual key card, the one they program. You know, you get one of those too. Because it's almost like, and it's scary the way it works. You need to be standing within X number of feet of your door and put your thumbprint on a button and you hear a door unlock and I hope it's mine. You know,
open your neighbor's door.
Yeah, right.
You know, it kind of reminds me the first place I saw that kind of technology going from either the standard like physical keys to the punch out keys to the magnetic key cards and then to the new either bring your own device or a specialty device to get yourself in was Disney. And it's when they started doing those magic band systems when they first introduced all that. And the magic band would let you into your room. They had your credit card on file. It would be used to pay for things. So it was this all-in-one device. Now they even though they still have those, they do prefer the bring your own device method that a lot of businesses are using. And it's putting off another thing onto the consumer to have to track and manage, so they don't have to. They don't have to maintain the devices or the keys or whatever. They don't have to train personnel and how to do it. It's just the system did it for you. It's on your phone. You go figure it out. And if you can't get into your room, well, then we got to recheck in like John had to do.
Yeah. Well, and then eventually your stay is over and then you have to check out. Now, that used to be a process whereby you went down to the front desk and you said what room you're checking out. And you did all that and you filled out the paperwork. And then you waited in line and they printed out the pages. And then I remember there was this evolution where they would start to have it on your TV, like the TV knew who you were and would say, ah, hello, Mr. John. Oh, you're checking out. Are you okay? But it would say you're ready to check out, whatever. And it might say call down to finalize or something. And now I feel again like I'm breaking the law. You just go on your app and I will sign out, check out of the hotel and just walk out the front door like I own the place. And like, shouldn't I stop and tell someone that I'm leaving? No, you don't have to anymore.
Don't you need to know?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, they found out on the computer just like I did. But sometimes I will even do the checkout while I'm driving. I'll do the checkout I'll get my bags out and I'll go downstairs and put them in the car and I'll start my drive and go, oh, yeah. And I'll open my phone and go, doom, check out. And now they know back there that I'm not in the room anymore. And you can do that now and not talk to anybody. You can take the whole trip and not talk to other humans if you want to these days.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember specifically there was a scene in a movie called Dodgeball that I love with Vince Vaughn. And he leaves the room early and one of his people walk in to check on him to see if he's coming down to tournament, which by the way always bothered me because I'm like, how does she get into his fucking room without a key? What how'd that happen? But she looks over the TV and it says, thank you for checking out Mr. So-and-so, blah blah, and that's when she knows he's abandoned him. And I remember doing that at hotels. I remember as the night auditor, like I talked about earlier, I was the guy who back in the day had to print out all those sheets of paper that got slipped under your door in the middle of the night.
Right. Oh, the under the doors. That's right.
And then I had to go I had to walk around the floors at like 3 a.m. and put those underneath the doors because it was determined by somebody that 3 a.m. was the magical hour because fewer people were like renting the porn on the TV or ordering room service. Or whatever. And so there were no more charges to be done at that point.
I see. They have spent what they're going to spend for that day and then you can lock them out. They're finalized.
Because every now and then somebody would at like 4 a.m. and they would come down to check out and you'd say, oh, sorry, there's actually some other charges that weren't on the bill I gave you. Here's your new bill. And they'd be mad as hell. I didn't rent, you know, Gussie's on acid or whatever it was.
Apparently you got frisky at 3:35 a.m. and new charges.
One thing is funny, I just realized that all three of us have worked in hotels at some point in our career, which I didn't know that. So learn something new today.
I didn't know that either. I didn't know you had.
Oh, yeah. I worked in Vista Hotel in New York.
Oh, okay.
And so I worked the top floor, like they had a separate bar, snack area kind of thing.
Like
I
a concierge area?
I worked there. And my job, one of my jobs when I was working the overnight was one of the things that people checked out and actually did check out, that helped housekeeping because housekeeping now knew they could go to that room ahead of time and clean it and not have to wait.
Helped their
now
schedule.
They don't know anymore. They just go after 11 o'clock or whatever time it is that you're supposed to check out by and just
tap on the door.
There.
Yeah. Housekeeping. No, come back later is what you get, right?
You want me to a pillow?
But like you said, it's just like you say, you don't have to deal with people anymore, which in some ways I kind of like it. In some ways I'm like, you know.
Yeah, depends on how antisocial you are. It's nice to talk to some people, but it's nice to not be forced to talk to every random person just to get something done anymore. So it's
a great world for me.
For George, you're antisocial? Yeah, you're good for that?
Yeah, I don't care to talk to anybody. Just leave me alone.
Well, good news. You're in good shape because you can travel in your little bubble.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
Wait till you see the changes we're making at Howard Johnson.
This is Howard Johnson? This is Howard Johnson? Is it that you're clicking Howard Johnson?
This is Howard Johnson?
If you haven't stayed with us recently, you may be in for a surprise.
This is Howard Johnson.
We're changing our rooms, our furnishings, and there's a new attention to service.
This is Howard Johnson.
This is Howard Johnson.
This is Howard Johnson.
So as we've talked about the ease of use and the technology changes, another thing that we don't talk about a lot on this show, but worth mentioning when we talk about travel, are changes to travel due to health reasons or social political reasons, things that have changed. And the first one, the most obvious one that leaps to mind is air travel. And that's the TSA and the continued increase in TSA management that has happened, of course, as political changes have happened and 9/11 happened. And that was, things were getting more locked down, but certainly September 2001, a switch was flipped and it went from like, yeah, we can kind of make things work pretty well without too much security to super tight security. So now just to get to the gate, you've got to take off your shoes and open up your bags and take out your laptop and put this in the scanner and empty your pockets and assume the position and, you know, bend over this barrel and all the things you've got to do and walk through the x-ray just in order to then get to the other end. That's something, oddly, they have not pawned off on your computers. Like, oh, I searched myself on the app. I'm fine. You know, let me through. They haven't done that. You still get that sometimes frisked to get inside.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's definitely changed because it was like, and, you know, I still believe a lot of that is kind of like, how much is that actually helping? You know, I mean, some security things, I mean, some of the things they did, like hardening the doors of the pilots. I'm like, okay, that definitely seems like that would help.
Sure.
Right.
The tangible change. Right.
But yeah, like, taking off your shoes, you know, that only started because of a guy who failed.
One guy.
To detonate his shoes. And it was stupid. They say it wouldn't even have worked like what he had set up. But I was reading someplace where somebody sat there and said, how much did that cost America in time? Because
for
him,
taking off shoes every time.
Oh, everybody had to take off and put on shoes. And he said, like, let's say generously, it's only 3 minutes extra times the millions of travelers times all this, you know,
and how many years we lost.
It's just some of the securities, like, it's, and now it seems like you actually can get past it though if you fill out some extra forms and pay some money.
Yeah,
you
know,
I've
done it.
That's very true. Yeah. I personally, I am a big fan of all the extra screening at any public transportation because they only really do it at airports. You don't see it at trains or buses.
No.
And maybe for different reasons, like I guess they figured the movie Speed is never going to happen, you know, or something. So they don't do it in public buses. But the only thing that I don't like about it is that they didn't fund it properly in order to keep those times for us down. Like, it's not that all those checks couldn't be done in a more efficient way with more TSA agents and systems and things in order to still get people through the lines quickly. They just said, okay, here's an economy of scale. We're only going to give you like two or three TSA checkout lines in a smaller airport, maybe four or five in a bigger airport. And everybody's just going to have to funnel through it and deal with the time loss and come to the airport 4 hours early.
Right.
And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
I do appreciate this because, Mo, I know you said, you know, the guy who was going to blow up his shoes or whatever and it wasn't going to work. But once that guy got publicity, there's going to be 500 other guys who are going to try and do it.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought of my shoes. What a great idea.
Yeah. Checking the shoes or taking off your belt or looking for, you know, sharp objects in hidden place. I'm for all of that, especially on a plane, because it's not just that it's a contained space. It's a contained space in the fucking sky. It only has to have one thing go wrong for everybody to fucking die.
Right. You can't just pull over to the side of the road and call AAA.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, if you're trying to take over a bus, okay, you can take it over, but the bus driver can stop the bus. So the bus part may not kill you unless it's speed, but still.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Yeah. Well, you hear the latest now? Self TSA checking?
Yeah.
I was kidding.
At
what? LA,
at Las Vegas.
Las Vegas Airport, they're trying it out. Where you basically put yourself through checkout, through your TSA screening. I'm not sure how it works. There's a guy in a screen or something like that. I don't know. It seems weird. Yeah. I think it's doomed
to
fail.
You're going through a line and they're using technology to try and scan you and your body and your stuff. And there's one guy watching everybody for when the system flags something suspicious. Then they can pull you out.
They pull you out.
Yeah. So I don't know.
It's trying that economy of scale. They're trying to reduce the amount of people.
Yeah.
And they say they're going to speed it up with technology, which never fucking works.
Yeah. One of the products of all this extra security, which is you can't walk to the gate anymore. And now that is something I fondly kind of have memories of as a kid. Like I said, my dad would travel and be able to go to the airport and go to the actual gate, have my face against the glass. Without a ticket,
Yeah.
And walk up and then see his plane actually taxiing up and get excited that he was coming home. Or if you had somebody who was maybe elderly relative that you could actually walk to the gate. And then somebody on the other side could be at the gate and pick him up. Now you have to pay someone to do that, you know, pay the airlines, or it's extra security and hassle and all that stuff, which, again, I understand for the security purposes, but it was definitely a memory that I think is, I finally remember doing that, like being able to walk people to the gate.
Yeah, I remember. In college, you might have been involved in this, George. It was someone in our Star Trek club was coming back home from summer or whatever, and we all went down like in our Star Trek uniforms to the airport, to their gate, to embarrass them when they got off the plane. You know, I was like, oh, nerds are here, right? And now that has shifted to where you can only do that in the this side of TSA. And so all those people congregate in that little
everybody queues up at the security exit point.
That's right, because that's the place where you're no longer in the secured space. But you're missing that the thing that you see in so many movies, right? You walk your friends to the airport and you know, chase them. Oh, one last kiss before you get on the plane. That doesn't happen anymore. It's one last kiss before you take your shoes off is the last time you're going to see them.
Right.
Yeah. And it's shifted the way that people, you know, greet each other or bid each other farewell when they're taking off on these trips.
I still remember the ending of Ted Lasso when the owner of Ted Lasso, she wants to run to the airport to say goodbye to him, but she can't get TSA, so she buys a ticket. So she can go to the gate. Yeah. And then he's like, why did you buy a first class ticket?
That's not required.
She's like, habit. I mean, some things I think that we've been doing, I totally understand why, you know, especially things with like health reasons, like, you know, like you can't get peanuts anymore on most flights, as far as I know, because, you know, there's so many people that have
peanut allergies.
Allergies to peanuts. If it's even in the same airspace as them, which I'm not sure how those people survive at all, because, geez, how do you avoid that for your whole life? I mean, that must be extremely difficult.
Yeah. Well, in a plane, it's like recirculated air. So I get why that happens. You know, I tell you what happened. What I've noticed is when I am on a flight, they'll mention no peanuts on this flight because we have people with peanut allergies. So sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. But it's, you would seem like if people can constrict their throat and die, like maybe just don't do it at all, because what if they didn't report it? But
Because I still see like in these travel YouTube channels that they're getting served warm nuts as part of their start off little snack thing. I think they're still there, but they're more cautious about it. One thing that is 100% no longer there on almost all public transit, even, you know, at places that you wouldn't think it would be an issue, but like hospitals and things, is smoking.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, sure.
Right. When I was a kid, my parents, especially my father, smoked crazy. I don't know if you guys remember your parents' cigarette brands, if they smoked, but
Winston,
my mother smoked Virginia Slim Lights and my father smoked non-filtered Camels, like the original Camel brand. And he smoked so much, like he was one of those literal chain smokers. Like he would light up one cigarette with the previous one and just keep going and going and going. And I just remember like when we would be at places with him or other people, just this haze, like a smog in the room
everywhere.
And I'm sure it was that way on flights. I only ever went on one flight where smoking was allowed. And then after that was when they stopped all of that. But I'm sure that smoking on a plane back in the day, probably for the people who didn't smoke, was horrific.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
In the early 90s, the few times that I flew when I was still young, there were still ashtrays in the armrests, even after they stopped smoking. They had not yet replaced all of the seats.
The little flip up metal door.
Yeah, a little door. Now, there was nothing in there. It was empty and clean because, or there was gum in there, trash in there now because people use it for other things. But the first flight I ever took when I was probably 12 or 13, there was smoking on that flight. And luckily, I don't remember a lot around me, but it was hazy. Certainly was a little hazy, like you suggested. Yeah.
I love the fact that they had a smoking section on the plane. Like that made a difference.
How does that work?
You know, and then also airports, like when I was flying back from, I was in Italy and the airport there, they had these two little rooms, like small, like they had to be 8x8. Yep. That's the only things you could smoke in the airport. Yep. And that place was, it was like wall to wall people. I was like, I was looking at this. I'm like, I just need to take a picture of this because this is almost comical how badly these people must want to smoke to be in that space. You know, to
do that. I've seen those rooms.
Yep. One of the local hospitals here has one of those little, it looks like a bus stop with two walls instead of just one. But it's in their parking garage in the nastiest looking part of the parking garage. garage. So you're like, oh, they're doing that shit on purpose. They put that there. Like, if they could have put an outhouse next to it, they probably would have.
I've seen those rooms and they, I'm sure they're super well ventilated and still they look like a, like a hazy cube of glass back there when it's all locked off.
Yellowing kind of.
Yeah.
I don't think I would ventilate it. If I was that business owner, fuck you. If you want to smoke, you're just going to smoke and keep smoking.
That's more free smoke from other people. Enjoy the secondhand as well. It's going to be great.
You don't have to buy a cigarette pack. You just walk into the room. You get all the nicotine. Just walk in and,
no, no, I have enough nicotine now. Yeah. Yeah, we also, along with, you know, the peanuts, and we talked earlier about the dichotomy now, the split, the chasm between first class and economy, but across the board, food, free food has gone away on flights of in general.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I didn't see these days. I've seen images, though, and footage of in the 50s and 60s when they're like rolling a carving tray, a giant ham, and they're slicing it off in real time for people all the way down the plane. Now, that's gone. And now you'll get, again, some nuts and a half a can of Coke and a little plastic cup. You get something and they'll sell you something. Again, that's one of those things that's offset. It's no longer everybody gets it. It's like, well, if you want it, we're not going to charge you for it up front. We're going to charge you for it when you get it. But again, they haven't lowered the prices overall to offset that. It's just a new income stream.
It's funny because that's the premise of AT&T's latest set of commercials. Like they have people on a plane and the lady's like, hey, would you like some water? The flight attendant. And she's like, sure, that'll be $27, please. Cash your card. And she's like, for water? And then the lady next to her is an AT&T rep. And she's like, well, we don't charge for blah, 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 or something like that. We make a promise, it sticks or something. It's funny that thing that pisses people off that is now gone forever, it's now fodder for other companies to use in their commercials.
As an example, parallel, sure.
Yeah,
I was looking up and it turns out, I think back in the day, this is even before I flew, depending on what time your flight went, depending on whether or not you got a meal. It didn't matter the duration. So if you were flying at dinner time, like from 4 to 6, you got dinner. If you're flying at breakfast time, you get breakfast. Now it's all based on how long your flight is, right? If your flight is less than X hours, you get nothing.
Yeah.
I remember they used to give you the whole can of soda, you know, and then now it's like they kind of pour out and they fill half with ice and then pour like a dribblet of Coke in it. And, you know, it's just kind of ridiculous. Again, it's like that whole nickel and diming thing that just annoys me.
Yeah. In this next segment, last segment of the show, I'm going to ask each of you to try to think of a specific memorable anecdote or story from traveling that you remember growing up as a Gen Xer. So think about that. When we get back from the break, I'll ask you to share.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
Even experienced flyers can get turned around in today's busy airports. But at American Airlines, we make things simple.
Right this way.
With one-stop check-in.
All set. You've got your boarding passes for this flight and your flight back.
I do?
Have a great trip.
I will.
American gets you through the airport quickly, when you're in a hurry, and even when you're not.
We're American
As we round out the back end of the show here, now before the break, I ask each of you to try to think of a memorable Gen X travel experience that you had. And since I just sprung this on you, I will start. I'll be first. And it kind of relates a little bit to, we talked about the maps and the GPS stuff. So my dad was a long haul truck driver. So a lot of my travel when I was a kid was during like the Christmas breaks and stuff when I would go with my dad because he was often away. But when I was off school, I could go with him. And this was, of course, before GPS and maps and everything. And so when I would go with my dad, he would make me feel like I was a vital part of the trip. He would, you're managing the Atlas. And it was a giant Rand McNally Atlas. It had leather or vinyl leather, cover pleather, whatever it is thing on there. And it was the whole country. And we were only going up the Eastern Seaboard, but he would be, all right, checking the map and find out like when's the next exit for such and such. And how do we get on I-43 or whatever? I found out later it was his Atlas. He'd driven this route so many times. He knew where he was going.
Of course.
Made me feel like I was part of it. So the Atlas, I have a great love for those old Atlases because my dad made it pretended like I was navigating the whole thing. And then you switch that over. So recently when my daughter was growing up, when she was 12, 13, 14, I would go on trips with her. I would take her on trips. I wasn't truck driver, but we would say, oh, let's go visit this state or whatever. And now I would try to do the same thing with her. Like, hey, look around, but on your phone, check on your phone and see what's around here. What's interesting? What are the places? And so it's directly from the Atlas thing my dad did with me that I would make my daughter, like I knew what was around. I had checked on Google before we left the hotel, but I would say, see if there's any good Mexican restaurants around this area. And I'd already driven to that area to kind of make her, to force her hand. And I forced the magic card that she picked. Is this your card kind of thing? But it's as the technology followed, and we talked about how it can be a dream for people that don't want to interact with other people. But there are also ways that you can throw back to that old stuff with modern technology. And that was a way I found to take that travel experience I love so much with my dad and not lose it, even though we've had these advances in tech. Mm-hmm. So that's what I remember most and how I've continued to adapt it. How about you, Mo? Do you have any specific solid memories?
Oh, God. I had one. I think, I had a summer where basically I had like nothing going on, like as far as like no summer camp. And my brothers were all off doing something. So my dad shipped me off to Denver to spend it with my aunt for some reason. So I spent the summer in Denver with my aunt, which was actually a great time. But the thing was, I flew by myself both ways and I was like 10. But again, my dad could walk me to the gate and then a stewardess would come out, grab my hand, walk me to my seat, and then they would walk me out. Aww. And then my aunt was at the other side picking me up, right? But anyway, on the trip back home, it was flying from New York to Denver. We're flying to Denver and we're like circling the airport for like ever. And then the pilot comes on. He's like, we can't land yet. And da, 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 da. So, you know, we're going to be circling for a while. We kept circling. And then he's like, okay, we're running low on fuel. So we're going to go to Newark, refuel, and then come back to the airport. So I'm like by myself. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So fly Newark, come back. Eventually we land. So what turns out was happening is that the guys who operate the gangways, they were on strike. So they had like managers and other people doing it who had no idea how to operate these things. So there's a huge backup at the gate.
The monkey wrench. Yeah.
So we land. The bad part though was that this is back in the day where it wasn't as easy to find out if flights were going to be late. You know, you had to call and figure all that stuff out.
You just weren't there and nobody knew why.
So my dad was at the airport waiting for me. Our flight was 5 hours late getting in.
Wow.
And so my dad was stuck at the airport. So he was happy to see me, of course, but he was mostly pissed because he was like, you know, they wouldn't tell him what was going on because no one wanted to admit that they had no idea how to operate these stupid gangways, which is why the whole problem was starting. But again, like with today, though, with technology, I get alerts on my phone that will tell me, hey, this flight's going to be 20 minutes late or it's going to be 15 minutes early. And, you know, I could totally plan and don't feel I'm not going to waste time anymore like I used to or wait. And probably everybody did back in the day. Mm-hmm. So that was my harrowing experience as a young flyer. So, George, how about yours?
Yeah, I mean, mine was also around flying, but I was a little bit older. When I was a senior in high school, we went on a senior trip that required a flight. I don't know if senior trips are still a thing for kids today.
Yeah, I think so.
Like my kid, they just drove to Orlando to go to Disney World. It was like a lame one. But we actually flew to Mexico. So we were flying to a different country.
Oh, wow.
And what I remember specifically was being very nervous because I didn't have a passport. I, you know, 18 years old in high school, passport wasn't a thing because we didn't travel internationally or anything as a family. But we didn't need one back then.
Right.
At that point, literally, all we had to have was some form of state issued identification. I had my driver's license. Other kids had state IDs or whatever. That's all you needed to fly over to Mexico and back. But I had a huge fear because I was going with my high school class, which was a very strict private Christian high school. And we were going to Mexico, which was the most unstrictest country our group could have gone to. And our chaperones in our school, like, lit into us before the trip. If we catch you doing anything unsavory or illegal, you will not be allowed to graduate.
Oh, wow.
Like, they were dead serious about it.
Now, illegal there or back?
And they said unsavory, so it wasn't legality.
Okay, all right.
Why'd they take you to Mexico then?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go to Salt Lake City.
Right. So four kids got passed out drunk at a tequila bar. Two other kids went off doing something between the two of them and didn't make the bus on time.
Oh, giggity.
So six different kids were not allowed to walk with us and graduate. Now, their parents apparently raised all kinds of hell when they got back, and they were like, listen, we paid for this diploma. Mm-hmm. You're giving our kids a fucking diploma. So they got their diplomas and they graduated, but they weren't allowed to walk with their class. Wow. So it was a very interesting trip, and that part was scary. But the part that still to this day, like, I was the most fearful about, because I wasn't really a drinker and wasn't going to do any of the other stuff that they were going to be mad about. I was worried I was going to get stuck in Mexico without a passport because some authority was going to say, look at this tall, pale white kid. He's got something wrong with him. He doesn't have a passport. We're going to keep him in Mexico. I was scared to death of that at that point. Hey, but
young man, papers? Let me see your papers.
Yeah.
It's like an old World War II movie.
Exactly.
I was giving you the benefit of the doubt that you did those things, but just smart enough not to get caught.
So. No. I have never been a drinker. John's known me forever. Mm-hmm.
Like, yep.
I've gotten drunk maybe 5-6 times in my life total. And the other stuff wasn't really any, I was just wanting to go and experience a different culture in a different country. Literally, I was being altruistic, but yeah, the rest of my class, not so much.
Not so much. Well, as much as it's changed, travel is still a great way to get out of your bubble and do something different. The way that it's so different because of all the reasons we talked about, ease of use and the technology and the political and the social health stuff. Though it's changed, there's still no substitute for, even if it's just get out of your town. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes I'll take a trip and just drive a couple hours up into Georgia to a place I've never been, just to be somewhere else. There's something mind cleansing about that. So as much hassle as it is, and as much as they won't let you graduate like you're supposed to, it's a great experience and a great way to get new perspectives, go to new places. So I love that we talked about it. And by the way, if you enjoyed this backtrack at all, even if you didn't, we have several other episodes about travel that Mo will throw links down to. We did one all about roadside attractions.
Oh, yeah.
We did one about long car rides.
Oh, wow.
And one about the Disney experience that has changed dramatically. But we talked about our Gen X Disney experience and how that's been updated over the years. So other great episodes you can go listen to right now. They're in the back catalog. Check the show notes. Before we get out of this episode, though, I want to thank a brand new Patreon supporter, Sid Chowdhury, headed over to genxgrownup.com/Patreon, opened up his wallet and says, yeah, I know this show is not something I pay for, but I want to support Gen X Grown Up. Sid, thank you so much for doing that. It means the world to us. You probably know you're joining a roster of amazing supporters that regularly support us. For as little as $1 a month, you can join Sid in supporting Gen X Grown Up. Again, just head over to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp, follow the on-screen prompts, and you'll be part of the army that keeps us motivated. Thanks so much again, Sid. That's going to wrap it up for this Backtrack edition of our show. Don't worry, another one's coming your way in 2 weeks, and next week is the standard edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth Lister, it's you we all three appreciate most of all, though, and we can't wait to talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up Podcast listeners, to the back... to this, what did I say? That's different. In 5, 4...
Do you want me to toss this one to you?
That's fine. Yeah, I saw a meme the other day that said... toolboxes and screwdrivers are now allowed on all Boeing flights so passengers can help with maintenance.
Somebody put that in their Discord server.
Did you see that? Oh, that's where I saw
that's
it. Awesome. Yeah, I shared it with the people.
That's
awesome. That's great. Okay, go ahead, Bob.
You want me fluff pillow?
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.